Hi guys, my name's Seal, and today I'll be talking about GIS, which is Geographic Information Systems, as well as remote sensing. Now, GIS basically has to do with whenever you have computers and you have spatial data together. So, for instance, Google Earth is a fantastic application of GIS, whereby you've got all the spatial data being represented in a convenient way for us, the users. Any maps you see out there today has been done with computers and are therefore a function of GIS. So beyond purely making maps, GIS can be used for spatial analysis. I'll give you an example here. Let's say I'm a park owner, a provincial park owner, and I've got a wolf's population here that I need to introduce to help reintroduce the wolf species into the area. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hire a geomatics guy, a GIS specialist, and I'm going to give him data of where the streets are at, where species which might be incompatible with these wolves are at, where all these other things are located. And then I'll give him constraints, such as you can't have wolves closer to or close to the highways here by at least 1 kilometer. You can't have them close to those incompatible species by at least 10 kilometers. And using that, he can compute, using GIS software, where it would be best to put the wolf population. On a more hacker-related note, this is stuff I was doing last year. I did a topographical map of Wi-Fi signals in the downtown core of my city. So I went out there, I collected a bunch of GPS data, I collected a bunch of Wi-Fi point source data, and what I did is I put it all together, I cleaned it up, and what I was able to do is make this map of signal density. And then I was able to isolate specific routers, and using that I was then able to triangulate where the routers were, what building, potentially what floor, had I done it a certain different way, stuff like that. Then, you know, another example is crime data, right? You often see in movies that there's maps in these police stations with little pinpoints, and that says where the crime is at. Well, for larger cities, that's quite unrealistic. So what they use is they collect data of where crime events occurred, and then we can use it with GIS to see the density of crimes in certain areas. And we can determine factors which might incite crimes, such as the presence of certain gangs, which we can compute, the presence of certain, I don't know, just as an example, schools for high school-related gangs. So stuff like that. And this is all stuff we do regularly with GIS. And GIS is not always about the 2D either. For instance, right now, I work at a place called LAGGIS, which is an advanced geomatics lab. And one of the things we're specializing is 3D representations of natural environments. And one of the things I'm working on right now is the 3D representation of urban environments. So I'm building up the city of Ottawa here, all in 3D, buildings, streets, everything. And that's really all GIS, and it serves many applications as well. Think about a business that wants to build a building somewhere, and they want to see how it's going to look like in advance. Well, you can use GIS to have that representation of the city there for him. So these are all things that can be done. So we've talked about what we can do with GIS, but let's talk a bit about the theory here. With GIS, you've got really two types of data that you can import. You've got raster, and you've got vector. Now, raster can be thought of sort of as bitmap files, and so you've got this thing where every pixel and every point is represented by a certain value. Only instead of being color or grayscale in this case, it can be representative of, well, this is trees, and, you know, 010 represents cats and, you know, whatever. Vector data is a bit different. Now, vector data can be thought of sort of like flash files. So your world is actually empty, and whether it's empty, there's actually no information there, but it's populated with points, lines, and polygons. Now, these things, you know, if you zoom into it like a flash file, because it's actually point-to-point data for polygons or whatnot, spatial data that makes it up, then when you zoom in, it retains its original shape. It doesn't pixelate like a raster would. And within, you know, vectors, there's three kinds. I said points, lines, and polygons. Now, points is basically made up of just a single spatial coordinate. Lines are made up of two. So you've got, you know, point A to point B, that makes a line. You've got polygons, and polygons are made up of multiple points, which are at a minimum composed of three to make a triangle, but you can have more complex shapes than that. And no, this is not broken up in a series of polygons, or a series of triangles, sorry, rather, like you'll see in 3D modeling applications. So let's give you an example here so things are less confusing. For vector, right, you're looking at a map of the state of Kentucky, which is a really bad example because I don't know anything about Kentucky. But let's say there's a city in Kentucky called Kentucky Town. Now, this would probably be best represented by a point, because it's too small really to represent by a shape. But the shape of the state could be a polygon, right? Because that you can see, again, it's well defined and it's well a shape. And then lakes could be polygons as well. But the individual counties within Kentucky could be represented by shapes, but the streets could be represented by lines, right? So there's a good example. But as you zoom in and zoom into Kentucky Town, well, it becomes bigger. And perhaps then it'd be wiser to represent it by its shape and thus a polygon. Now, because of the precision afforded to us by vectors, you might wonder why one would deal with raster data to begin with. Well, all the raw data that you get for elevation is raster, and that's how it was basically collected from the remote sensing tools, the satellites, the aerial radar instruments, and so forth. Topographical maps, being vector in origin or in nature, are actually made up from these raster data. And you can also do cool things. You know, because the point of GIS is really to make maps that are easily interpretable by people, using elevation rasters sort of looks weird. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but if you haven't, it just looks awful. But what we can do is we can now do this thing called hill shading. And what hill shading does is that it takes elevation data, it calculates where the slopes are, what the heights are, and so forth, relative to points all across the map, in order to make what would look like a shaded 2.5D representation of the thing. So things actually look like hills instead of these splotches. Now, the tool of choice to create all of this is a program called ArcMap, which is part of the ArcGIS suite from a company named Esri. And this is basically the Photoshop of the map-making world, and it actually works pretty similarly, too. So if you've ever used Photoshop or the GIMP, this works on a basis of layers, and you import layers, and you can do these little functions to them, these mathematical analyses, these whatever you want. So it's obviously a bit more complex and a bit more expensive, but that's what it allows you to do. But for us, there's a bunch that are free as well. Esri has a tool called Arc Explorer, which you can download off their website. Unfortunately, it's not really for manipulation so much as queries, but there are some, if you're a Windows user, which do allow for some level of manipulation, such as Diva GIS and Map Window. Now, you'll have to Google for their addresses. GRASS, if you're a Linux user, is a full-on GIS editor, and I've had the pleasure to play with this a bit. But unfortunately, the big downside of GRASS is that it has a GUI that sets it back about 20 years. But on the plus side, it works on BSD, Solaris, Linux, all distros, you know, pretty much everything. Windows as well. But, you know, you're only so good as your data. So if you've got all these tools and you've got no data, you're somewhat in a pickle. So there's some free sources out there, and these are the ones I use regularly for Canadian data, and I'm sorry to my American and otherworldly friends. Unfortunately, I don't know the sources for your respective countries, but still, this is a good start. GeoGratis, which is available from GeoGratis, so GeoGratis.cgdi.gc.ca, is one source which contains everything from bathymetry to street highway data to borders for cities and provinces, you name it, city data, census, whatever. GeoBase is another source. I think they have elevation data. Don't have much more than that, though. And they're available from geobase.ca, so GEOBASE.ca. And so I invite you to check these apps out, have some fun. If you've got any questions, you know, hook up with me on either the BenRev forums or email me, and I'll give my email at the end of the show. So at the beginning of the show, I said that we'd talk about GIS, Geographic Information Systems, and remote sensing. Now on to the remote sensing part of things. And what remote sensing is basically the collection of information taken remotely, i.e. not in direct contact or close proximity to the object of study. So in this context, we're talking about data collected from satellites, data collected from spy planes, data collected from regular scientific study plans, and so forth. And so there's many things we can do with this. So for instance, we're able to determine the health of a certain vegetation patch. We're able to determine exactly what kind of vegetation is there. We're able to determine the spread of water. We're able to determine if there's fake vegetation hiding tanks in military environments. And basically, this all relies on the fundamentals of spectral signatures. And I talk a lot about vegetation here, but, you know, this extends to basically whatever is on the surface of the Earth. So oceans, phytoplanktons, their health, anything really, streets, urban area, you name it, we can really tell things about it using this remote sensing. And the theory behind spectral signatures is that everything, as you learned in first year science in high school or whatnot, has its own electromagnetic signature. And these satellites and these aerial imagery devices tend not to collect things in only the visible band. They actually collect data in the near infrared, the middle infrared, sometimes the UV, whatever visible, and we're able to use what those extra bands in order to compile the signatures that we see on the ground and associate that with certain things, whether it be vegetation health and so forth. And then the great thing about this is that it's really cheap to implement, right? It's only so much as the cost of the geomatics guy and the satellite imagery. So I'll give you an example with a friend of mine. He's studying with, I believe it's the Kenyan government, and what they're doing is he's able to analyze farmland really quickly and ascertain the viability of that land for future farm use. And if there's any issues, he's able to know why, because again, everything that is on the surface really has a spectral signature, and he's able to, from that, extrapolate what exactly the conditions for the ground situation is. And so for the tools we use, for the most part, I use a tool called PCA Geomatica, and it's made by a Canadian company here. Now, it's more than just analysis, because a big part of remote sensing is cleaning up data. When you get data from satellites, raw data, there's lots of issues with it. For instance, there might be graininess to it. There might be, because satellites take things typically in sweeps, the bands of data it took might not align with each other, so there's issues there. It might be off in certain collection of certain measurements with a few of its sensors, or its sensors rather. And so you've got all this that you have to clean up. And when you get it from the satellite company, they offer it to clean it up for you, but that costs a whole lot more. So that's a big part of remote sensing. In terms of free tools for you guys to use to have fun with this, PCA Geomatica does have a free version of their software. It's limited on the manipulation end. And it does come with a few free satellite images for you to try out. Unfortunately, for the most part, satellite imagery is extremely expensive, and I do not know of any free sources for them, I'm sorry. And no, Google Earth and Google satellite data does not count, because basically what you see is what you get. All you get is stuff that's in the visible, which is pretty useless because most of the analysis involves more than just three bands. And furthermore, I've noticed that some of their stuff is false color data. And false color is basically when you take other bands, such as the near-infrared and middle-infrared, whatever, or a mix of bands that were passed through some kind of mathematical algorithm, and put them in a visible band, right? Because people can't see near-infrared, but they can see blue. So you take that near-infrared data, put it into the blue, and then suddenly people can see the near-infrared data, but it's, you know, in a bluish color strength. And, you know, but if you don't know what bands they used, or, you know, how that they came to present that data, then it's pretty much useless. Think of it as a mathematical equation where you know what the result is, but if you don't know the equation itself or even what was used for it, then that number is meaningless. Another tool to do remote sensing manipulation is called Spring. It's available from the website, which is dpi.inpe.br. It's fully featured, apparently. I've never used it, and it's also Linux compatible, or so they say. Whether it actually works with your distro, again, I cannot vouch for. GRASS, on the other hand, does have a good reputation for working with pretty much all distros. But again, GRASS is not a remote sensing application. So that pretty much concludes our quick intro into the world of GIS and of remote sensing. Should you have any questions, you can email me at julian@jmcardle.com. That's Julian with an E, so that's julian@jmcardle.com. This has been another episode of TWAT Radio. Again, remember that TWAT Radio is a user-contributed thing, and they're always looking for new hosts, so if you think you've got a good topic, feel free to submit. And I'd like to thank Enigma Zero for finally pushing me to do this show. So, congrats, guys. Have a great time. I have no idea what the music at the end of the show is, because I'm not even there yet, but hey, I hope it's good. And that was Tomorrow's Hope by Stock 20.